originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show trainers listen to. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network, originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, extending a very special welcome to everyone across HRN Nation, including all of you listening throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201 and tuned in to our free live streaming or archived podcast of the show. You are doing that, of course, on our website at horseracingradio.net. Very happy to have you with me for the next hour as I get a chance to visit with a trainer who is really on a roll right now. There's no other way to say it. He has saddled 514 winners in his career thus far. That number will grow much higher because of the caliber of horses that he is starting to get. Many of those winners have been blue-collar horses, grinding out a career in races not necessarily in the spotlight. But that all changed December 21st, 2016, when a chestnut colt by the unheralded stallion Mutata was claimed for $10,000 out of a maiden race at Delta Downs. And as they say, the rest of the story is history. And that certainly is music to the ears of trainer Shane Wilson, who is our special guest here tonight on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Shane, welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, happy to have you on board, and congratulations on all your success. Of course, the horse we're referring to is Mocito Rojo, who won the Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs on September 28th, and a huge win for you and a massive moment in your career. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was incredible. You know, he just continues to, you know, get better and better each time, it seems.
Well, we're going to hear his entire story. I'll let you tell it because you can tell it far better than I can. We'll also look back on your life in racing, your career. We'll do that over the course of the next hour. But I thought it would be appropriate, Shane, to start by taking you on a little trip back to that night, September 28th, beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill, and this stretch run of the Lucas Classic.
Silver Dust takes the lead, 2.5 furlongs out. Pioneer Spirit's under pressure, back into second. Mocito Rojo rolls up on the outside now, second, coming after Silver Dust. Quip is under pressure in behind, pops outside for the final quarter mile. Kukulkan swings wide with Blue Ridge Traveler racing for the eighth pole. Silver Dust, tenuous lead. Mocito Rojo bearing down outside. These two head and head, 16th to go. Blue Ridge Traveler is there. Big Dollar Bill late on the scene, 100 yards left. Here's Mocito Rojo and Silver Dust. Mocito Rojo wears down Silver Dust to win it by a neck in the end. Silver Dust very game, but second nonetheless. Farther back, Blue Ridge Traveler was third.
Well, that's Travis Stone bringing them home. Again, the Lucas Classic, September 28th, the night race beneath those Twin Spires, and Mocito Rojo getting the victory for Shane Wilson, who was our guest on Trainer Talk here tonight. Shane, as you're listening to that call, what's going through your mind here at this moment?
Oh, just, you know, thinking back, you know, the whole time, you know, he got the trip that he likes. He likes to kind of stalk up speed. And, you know, the whole time when they're turning for home, and I'm thinking, if we can just get even with Silver Dust. I know he's a grinder, too. He likes to fight. Look at his record. He's always there at the wire. But, you know, with Mocito, I always feel like if we can just get even, you know, it seems like he always has a little more push that he can, you know, can give a little bit more. And I was looking back behind him, and you know, none of the big closers were making any move at all. And, you know, about the eighth pole, you start getting that feeling like, man, we might can really do this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How about when he crossed the finish line and you knew you had it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew we were good neck and front by then, you know, and I watched Gerard, and he'd hit him a few times, you know, about the eight pole, but he put it away and was just showing him the whip, the last part. And, you know, whenever he, when he put the whip away and he was riding pretty confidently, I figured he had enough horse under there. He thought he could get by. And, you know, that was really the horse that I was afraid of, Silver Dust. He'd just run a big number in his last win, and we'd beaten Pioneer Spirit before. And Quip, it looks like, you know, Quip, either he's either big race or he doesn't fire. And, you know, I really was expecting Pioneer Spirit and Quip to show the pace, and then we'd be able to sit on the outside of Silver Dust. But with when they took Quip back, it kind of gave me a little scare in the first turn that maybe nobody would pressure Pioneer Spirit. But he ran big, you know. He run equaled his highest, you know, E-speed figure and his highest buyer number.
When I called you to ask you if you would be willing to join me here on the program, you talked about the owner, Wayne Davis, and you talked about how special that moment was for him when Mocito Rojo crossed the finish line. Tell me that story.
Yes, sir. Mr. Davis is 90 years old, and he's had horses for, I don't know, maybe 25 years. Me and him been together, I think it's either 11 or 12 years, and we've been really close. We'd claimed a filly one time, Top Doll, for $20,000, and we got beat a nose in $100,000 Futurity, and then we claimed another filly for $10,000, Arctic Peace, and she got beat a neck in a $75,000. He'd never won a stakes race, you know, after all these years, and I've been close in sales futurities and stuff like that. And then whenever Mocito Rojo came along, and, you know, he's his first stakes winner, and, you know, he told me over and over again that all of his friends had told him if he could just stay in the business long enough, he'll end up with a good horse sooner or later. And, you know, he's 90, and he told me that night whenever Mocito Rojo crossed the wire, you know, he said, Shane, I've done a lot of stuff, but I've never had this much fun in my life, you know. And, you know, for him to be able to do that at his age, you know, but he deserves it. He's had a lot of patience with this business. He's put a lot of money into this business, and, you know, he absolutely lets you do what you need to do. You know, there's no pressure to, you know, to hurry a horse. And, you know, just like with Mocito, we claimed him in December, and I never ran him back until May. You know, we had some stuff we had to get healed up on him. And, you know, he deserves to have a horse like this, because owners like that are hard to come by nowadays.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he lets you kind of do your thing, and that he's very patient. He's looking out for the welfare of the horse. It's great to see owners like that finally get rewarded.
Yes, sir, because he spent a lot of money on a lot of cheap horses. And, you know, he tells me all the time, I try to not spend his money unwisely, you know, and, you know, whether it be ulcer medication or whatever I'm doing. He tells me all the time, he says, Shane, don't cut any corners. He said, all you got to do is win one race, and it makes it worth whatever it costs. He says, so do whatever we need to do. And, you know, he reminds me all the time, you know, where I'm trying to not spend any more than we have to, because I know how much this costs him every month. But he absolutely wants what's best for the horse, whatever it is, you know.
How long have you been training for Wayne?
It's about 11, almost 12 years.
Wow. Well, how'd you first get introduced to him?
You know what? He had, there's another gentleman in Louisiana Downs, Jerry Court, had trained his horses for him. And Jerry was cutting back. You know, he was wanting to kind of just train his own horses and not have owners, and just kind of like a little bit of retirement or whatever. And I'd known Mr. Cart from whenever I was grooming horses as a kid. I was in the same barn with him, and then as I'd gone on to train on my own, we'd always been friendly. And I got a phone call, and he told me that he had an owner that he was wanting him to give me the number to call. And he said that Mr. Davis is going to be looking for someone to train his horses, and he said he was looking for somebody that would be honest with him and not take advantage of him, you know, try to take care of him because he's a good client. And so he gave me his number, and we talked, and he brought me one horse, and, you know, we've been rolling since. Now I got 21 horses for him now, you know, and it's been a great partnership. And it's not really so much that I'm his trainer and he's my owner now. It's more like family. I have two sons that are 16 and 18, and, you know, Mr. Davis comes and watches football games when the boys play, and, you know, we go on fishing trips together. And, you know, my kids, they look at him as like a grandfather figure. You know, he's more than just an owner to us now.
Wow. Wow. It's a great story. And to have those kind of relationships in racing, we see them once in a while, but they, you know, they're few and far between, aren't they, Shane?
Oh, very much so. You know, luckily for me, you know, everything nowadays is so much with the computer. You know, if you don't have 25 or 30% win percentage, you're not getting any clients. You know, that's, I mean, that's just the way the world is. Now everything's based on your win percentage. And luckily for me, you know, we claim a lot of horses, but I don't claim a horse for 10,000 running for 5,000. You know, I mean, when we claim them, we've studied pedigrees and watched replays. And we're hoping that we're claiming something that we can improve. And luckily I have Mr. Davis, and he lets me make a few mistakes along the way, you know, where you're not just under pressure where every time you run, you got to win or the horse is going to go to somebody else's barn. He'll let me try one of them long, take them back to last, you know, put some blinkers on, run them short, run them long. And then if we haven't gotten what we were hoping we got, then, you know, we'll put them where we got to put them to win. But he doesn't just, you know, drill on you to try to have the high win percentage. And, you know, I'm thankful for that, because today's world, that's a lot of who gets all the horses are the guys that win the 30%. And it doesn't matter if they're claiming them for 50 and running them for 10, just as long as they got high win percentages, they keep getting all the horses, you know?
Yep. Talking with trainer Shane Wilson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you're just joining us, Shane is the trainer of Mocito Rojo, who won the Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs on September 28th, that grade three, the second grade three in the career of Mocito Rojo, who, by the way, talking about claiming, he himself a $10,000 claim out of a maiden race at Delta Downs back on December 21st of 2016. Shane, as you were maybe getting into the process of looking for another horse to claim, how did Mocito Rojo catch your eye?
But I had an older horse that had broke his maiden in a maiden allowance race, and I was running back, and he didn't run well, so I was putting blinkers on him, and I was working him after the break. He worked from the gate. And like I said, he was a four-year-old that had won, and he actually worked with Mocito Rojo, and Mocito Rojo beat him four or five lengths, just ran away from him in a workout. And I saw when he pulled up, I looked at the saddle towel, and I said, man, that horse looked like a two-year-old, but I thought there's no way that was a two-year-old. So whenever I got home and got on the computer, I pulled up the workouts for the day, and sure enough, a chestnut unraced colt, Kentucky bred colt named Mocito Rojo, had the best work of the day. And so I put his name down, and I went back and studied his pedigree. And his mother was bred once more, and it was a full sister to him. And she made like $130,000, $127,000, something like that. But she was claimed first time out for $20,000 at Churchill Downs by another trainer. And so when I saw that horse, I said, you know, more than likely this is a homebred horse, so this horse may show up for a tag. And I called Mr. Davis and told him about the workout, and I told him the horse's name. I said, you need to look up his pedigree. His father was great at stakes place sprinter. Mother's an unraced orientate mare, but has some Chilean champions in her bottom side. And I said, there's a full sister made almost 130. I said, if they run the horse for 20, I think we should take him. So that was the plan. We were going to claim him for 20 when they ran him. And I look up about 2 weeks later, and he was in from 8 and 10. And we got lucky. We actually had to shake. It was a two-way shake, and we got lucky to get him. And he had some sore shins, had to have some time. You know, when we got back, and like I said, we claimed him in December and sat on him till May. You know, I just kept working on him and gradually getting some work into him and trying to not make him sore, you know, just trying to get him sound and keep him fit at the same time. And finally, that May of the next year, we had him 100%. You know, shoot, he's been rocking ever since.
Yeah, and you had an option here after winning that Lucas Classic. A lot of connections would say, okay, we're using this as a prep for the Breeders' Cup. We're going to Santa Anita. And you opted not to do that. He's back home with you now in Louisiana. Talk about that decision. And was it difficult to avoid the temptation to go to Santa Anita?
No, I don't think so. You know, he's won two grade threes. And, you know, if you look at what we've done with him, you know, I always just try to, from the beginning, you know, he won his first start for us. And then we tried him in a first level allowance, and he won. And then we spent the next, you know, year or so running in 10,000 starter allowance races because he was eligible for it. And, you know, I was trying to, he kept winning those starter races, and he was doing it pretty easily. Had in the back of my mind thinking that we had a better horse than this, but I was going to take advantage of that eligibility. And you know, a young horse, the more they win, the more confident they get, the more they want to win. And, you know, so we kept him in there. And then as the winter came around this last year, I started looking at the numbers that he was running, the rag numbers and the e-speed figures that he was running in these $75,000 and $100,000 stakes races. And Silver Dust was actually one that I'd watched. It won the Mineshaft at the Fairgrounds, and then he come back and was second in the New Orleans Handicap. And we were running numbers as good as him in these little $75,000, $100,000 races. And so, you know, based on his numbers and where the other horses had been competed, we took a shot at Lone Star. And with, you know, with Lone Star having their race in April and New Orleans having a New Orleans Handicap and Oakland having an Oakland Handicap, I said, you know, the people in New Orleans are going to stay in New Orleans. The ones at Oakland are going to stay at Oakland. I said, so this may be the best spot to give him a chance to see if he can compete in a grade three. And it worked out well. You know, he won. And, you know, so then we come back for the Lucas Classic. His numbers fit there. So, you know, I think to go from, you know, from the little $75,000, $100,000 stakes races to a grade three and then take him to California in a grade one, you know, $1 million race, I don't think it's right for him. You know, he might could go out there and run well or run a good third or a fourth, but I just think the way that we went with him and the way it's been going, I want to try him in a grade two now and just keep, you know, trying to space his races out and work him way up. And then maybe, you know, maybe next year if we're still rolling this time of year, maybe he'll be a grade one horse. But, you know, until then, he's done so much for us and for me and for Mr. Davis and my family and everybody. We've never had a horse that we could travel in and run in these races and go places, you know, and he's already done so much for me. I really don't, the last thing I want to do is put him in a spot he's over his head and get him whipped because he don't deserve that, you know.
Yeah, the Lucas Classic was your first ever starter at Churchill Downs, and it was the same for Mr. Davis too, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, neither one of us had ever run there.
So what was that like? You walk in, you see the twin spires, all that history, all the tradition of Churchill Downs. Was it... I don't know. I don't want to use the term overwhelming, but was it pretty cool?
Yeah, it was really neat. I knew the racing secretary, Ben Huffman. He was at the fairgrounds before when I used to staple down there. And I tell you, him and all the way to the stall superintendent, to the horseman services people, you couldn't ask for a better experience. You know, Ben, Mr. Davis had, I think, 15 or 16 people with him, and you know, Ben and him had him a place upstairs, and he got him a spot right by the winner's circle where he could watch the race because, you know, he wanted to make it easily access for him. And then, you know, at the stall superintendent coming by every morning checking to see if you need anything, you know, and it's like, you know, we were treated like we were a big deal, you know, and we were coming from, you know, Delta Downs in Vinton, Louisiana to Churchill, you know, and, you know, it was unbelievable how good everyone was to us everywhere. We went and after the race to win the race, and then we go upstairs and, you know, have champagne with the vice president of Churchill Downs. And, you know, they're thanking us for bringing our horse to their track. And, you know, in a time where racing gets a lot of bad press, you just can't imagine how well we were treated at Churchill Downs by everyone involved. You know, it was, you'll never forget it. You know, I'll never forget it. I know Mr. Davis won either, and he had a lot of friends that were there. And, you know, it was super, you know, just a really, really good experience for all of us. And, you know, it makes you want to get more good horses and go to more places, you know. It makes you where you can dream that maybe one day you could have a stable and be stable there, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, certainly it's a thrill of a lifetime. You're now undefeated, a perfect one-for-one with your runners at Churchill Downs, which is always nice to be able to say. Gerard Melanson, the jockey, I read as I was getting ready for the program, certainly he's won at Churchill before, but this was his first win at Churchill Downs since 1985. I was shocked to read that.
Yeah, he's been just based in Louisiana all that time. Yeah. I think he might have been an apprentice rider whenever he was up there last, or I know he had an apprenticeship there for a little while, but those guys from down here, they don't usually stay away from home too long. They all... Them Cajuns, they like to be home.
Well, he's one of those Louisiana jockeys, and we've seen so many great ones come out of Louisiana, but he's one of the top riders there. Why is he such a good fit with Mocito Rojo?
You know, Gerard, actually, he'd won on him the day that I claimed him. And then I had the other rider, Philemon Rodriguez, that ridden him for the other, you know, whatever 14 victories he's had. And Philemon got injured, and whenever he went down on the horse at Evangeline, so we were looking for a rider. And Mr. Davis has always been a fan of Gerard's, and you know, he'd asked me, he said, you know, what about we try Gerard on this horse? And I said, well, he's one for one. You know, he rode him once and went once the day we claimed him. Said, so he hadn't been beaten on him. And he come to breeze him a couple of times, and he couldn't believe it was the same horse, you know, from he rode him as a two-year-old. Now he's a five-year-old stallion. He's still a stallion. So he's, you know, he's a big, thick guy now. And Gerard, you know, he studies the form, and he, you know, he looks at the races, and, you know, he watched the replays on the horse, and, you know, he fits him really well. You know, he got a lot of run out of him the other night, and, you know, we were all excited. But Mr. Davis always thought of Gerard as being a big, you know, he calls him a money rider. He said, you know, whenever they have the big races at Delta or Evangeline or whoever, wherever they're at, you know, people ship horses in from Fairgrounds or Oakland. They always put Gerard on those horses because he's kind of known for getting the job done, you know, whenever he's in those bigger races. So Mr. Davis wanted me to go to him and try to get him to ride our horse while Philemon was injured. So he was happy to get on him, and sure, he's two for two since he got back on him.
Yeah, he's part of what is really a remarkable story with this horse, even going back to the sire, Mutada, who I mentioned at the top of the show, kind of a unheralded sire. A lot of people won't be familiar with his name, but he started his career at Crestwood Farm here in Lexington, and then in 2016 went through the Keeneland January sale and was purchased for $1,500 by the person who was the night watchman who used to take care of him at Crestwood. And I thought that story, that part of the story, was fantastic as well.
Yeah, you know, I've seen quite a few of those horses that, you know, they bring down here from up north, and the Van Dorns bred a lot of their own mares to him. And, you know, but if you look at his numbers, I think he's had like 21 starters and 17 winners for his career.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't, you know, Macedo is definitely his biggest horse, but, you know, like, well, you look at Macedo Rojo's mama, you know, it ain't like, you know, he got a blue hen mare there. She's an unraced orientate mare, you know, and then you come up with a grade three winner out of it. So I don't know. I like the stud. They had a few other ones that I'd seen run around here, and it seemed like they're all kind of big, stout, you know, thick horses. And, you know, I wasn't at all worried about the stallion. Like I said, I remember watching him run whenever he was running at the fairgrounds and stuff in some of those sprint stakes. And, you know, that's the thing with Macedo is it's interesting. If you look at, like, his dosage profile and dosage index numbers, you know, all of his numbers show that the further he goes, the better he should be. And his dad was predominantly a sprinter. But I guess he gets the stamina from the bottom side of the family, but I don't know. I don't even think he breeds mares anymore, Mutada.
Yeah, yeah. Shane, you mentioned earlier that it would be great to have a stable where, you know, now that you've gotten a taste of what it's like to travel to these other big races and move out of Louisiana a little bit, it'd be cool to have a stable where you could do that and have those kind of horses. How many horses do you have now, and what would be the goal? How many would you like to have?
Oh, I have a big stable here. You know, we have, let's see, right now at Delta Downs, I have 38 horses here. And
wow.
we just go from Delta Downs to Evangeline Downs back and forth. And, you know, mostly everybody's, you know, 5,000 and 4,000 claimers. And, you know, we got a couple of allowance horses here and there. But mostly what we do is claim horses. And I have one client that'll buy a couple yearlings every year. And, but mostly what we do is we claim horses. And, you know, you just don't have the quality of horses to be, you know, at Churchill or anything like that. But, you know, it's kind of always been the way I felt about it. Like, I didn't want to go to run at Churchill just to go run at Churchill. You know, if you have a horse that's good enough to run at Churchill or Keeneland, you go. And if you don't, then there's no reason to go just to say you go, you know. So we finally got one that's good enough to go to those places, so we decided to try it.
Yeah, talking with Shane Wilson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. He now has that horse that can take him to other racetracks outside of Louisiana, and as you heard me say earlier, he's one for one at Churchill Downs with that victory in the Lucas Classic with Mocito Rojo. Shane, what was your first year that you saddled your very first horse?
1998.
Where was that?
Oh, shoot. I think the first one was a maiden filly named Wall Street Heiress that ran third for us. And, you know, it started out, I was an assistant trainer for Sam David. And whenever we won the Kentucky Oaks with Blushing KD when I worked for Sam. And I started on the track when I was 15 years old, just looking for a summer job, and I went off to college and played football a little bit and wasn't good enough to keep doing that. So when I came home, I just went back to the racetrack, and I've been to the racetrack ever since. I took 2 years off when my oldest son got old enough to start school. My wife, she wanted a normal life and didn't want me to be home 6 months and gone 6 months. So I got out of the horse business for 2 years and took a sales job and didn't like that. And so when it came back, we've been here ever since. So since 98, been doing this all but 2 years of it. And, you know, started out with four horses and grooming them yourself and doing the whole deal. And I got lucky and had some really good clients. I have Farrell Ryder, who was a Ryder River Farm up here. He sent me some horses. And then I had horses for John Franks whenever he passed away. And we had to kind of rebuild from there. And then, you know, getting out of it for 2 years, we had to come back and start all over again. I made some phone calls, and a couple of clients I'd had before gave me six horses, and I was right back cleaning stalls and grooming again. But this time I had two sons and a wife and tried to make a living with six horses. And, you know, luckily we just kept fighting and picking up a couple more here and there. And, you know, been really blessed, you know, been able to do this, you know, all these years. And, you know, I know a lot of people have to do jobs that they don't like to do. And, you know, I've been thankful to be able to put two kids in private school. My oldest son's at LSU now. He's in the engineering. And, you know, we've been afforded the lifestyle to be able to do what we do. And I get to get up every day and never really have to go to work. You know, if you enjoy what you're doing, you don't go to work. And, you know, that's the way I feel getting to work with the horses. You know, shoot, we're here 7 days a week and, you know, love it. You know, it's more than a job. It's a lifestyle, you know, like everybody says. But, you can't wait to get out there every morning to see them coming off the track, see who's bucking and squealing and who's training very aggressively and who's walking quiet. Maybe they need a day off tomorrow. And, you know, just to see the different personalities and how they react every day is, you know, it's always something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's a special game, and for Shane Wilson, it's working out pretty well, as you just heard. We'll continue to talk about his background and some of the other success stories he's had throughout his career. We'll do that when we come back. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominations are now open to the Fasig Tipton November Sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. The sale annually produces the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world, and in 2018 sold 22 horses for $1 million or higher. Held the Monday after the Breeders' Cup, this one-night sale offers leading racing and broodmare prospects, proven producers, and selected yearlings in the most electric atmosphere you will find at any thoroughbred auction. Nominate your best today, the Fasig Tipton November Sale, where stars shine brightest.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
The Woodbine Fall Turf season continues with stakes action every weekend. Join us for live racing every Wednesday night at 6:45 p.m. Eastern, Friday at 3:40 p.m. Eastern, and Saturday and Sunday at 1:05 p.m. On October 12th, Grade 1 turf racing returns as the world comes to Woodbine for the Grade 1 Pattison Canadian International and the Grade 1 EP Taller Stakes. For more racing and horse player information, please visit woodbine.com.
The Maryland thoroughbred industry. For over 200 years, the innovative leader. Maryland was the first to have organized racing in North America and the first to establish a state breeders association. Maryland created the first thoroughbred yearling show, the first state magazine, the first state breeder incentive development program, the first international race to feature horses from four continents, and the first $1 million one-day stallion stakes event. The Maryland thoroughbred industry is the innovative leader.
I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, will the strips make my horse go faster?
The reality is, there's nothing out there that's going to turn a $10,000 claimer into a graded stakes winner. But what we should think about, NASCAR figured out long ago, incremental improvements collectively provide improved performance. That's one area where a flare strip can help. They're part of the toolkit that many trainers use to make marginal gains for overall improvement in health and performance.
Learn more at flarestrips.com/learn.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is a tightly bunched field as King Abner emerges with the lead here as they come to the quarter pole to Mocito Rojo. Airstrike to the outside, right in contention. Shotgun Cowboy races fourth, title ready. One off the rail is about three lengths off the lead as they straighten away. King Abner throws down the first gauntlet. Mocito Rojo right there to the outside. Mocito Rojo on the inside, King Abner, then Airstrike, and title ready is racing in fourth as Mocito Rojo, Philemon Rodriguez draw clear with the Steve Sexton mile. King Abner was second. Finishing third was title ready, and Airstrike was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mocito Rojo getting his first Grade 3 victory. That was back on April 28th at Lone Star Park. He would rack up a second one in the Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs on September 28th of this year. It's been quite a year. He's won five consecutive races and five for six here in 2019, 17 for 25 lifetime with earnings of nearly $800,000 for his trainer, Shane Wilson, who is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here tonight. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of this show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. That win, pretty special. Not only the first graded stakes victory for trainer Shane Wilson, but as I mentioned, the first for Mocito Rojo, who, if you missed this in the first half of the show, was a $10,000 claim and now a multiple grade three winner. And that win coming in the Steve Sexton mile, named for the former president of Churchill Downs, Steve Sexton, who passed away about 7 years ago. Boy, what a night that had to be for you, Shane. You talked about it in the first half of the show, but to finally break through and all the hard work and dedication you put in over the years, it all kind of came together that one night.
Yes, sir. Really, the one at Lone Star was the that was the one that really set it off. You know, you look at the, you know, as a trainer, you're all the time looking at these speed figures and rag numbers and, you know, distances and, you know, and the, to think that he could compete in the grade three, you know, then you do all the traveling and all the planning and you get there and, you know, and you get up there and you get to the paddock and you see all the other horses and, you know, in the back of your mind, you know, it's like, man, I hope we don't just get him crushed in here. And then to watch him draw away down the lane, you know, to me, that was the one that really, you know, it really set it off because, you know, like I said, you hope so much that he can be that good. And, you know, horses run big numbers when they run against lesser competition. And when you step them up, sometimes they can't compete with the better horses. And, you know, for him to beat other multiple graded stakes winners that day, you know, just kind of solidified that, you know, he is this good. And, you know, then to come back and do it at Churchill again with an even stronger field the other day, you know, it's just really hard to even grasp it, you know, that he's the same, you know, the same little chestnut two-year-old we claimed for $10,000 and the journey that he's been on. Sometimes on Sunday mornings when I get up, my family's all still asleep. I'll go in and just run his replays back from the first race to, you know, watch all the wins, you know, just to watch it come again. Because, you know, it's just hard to believe a $10,000 claim could do all that he's done for us.
Yeah, and I can imagine as somebody who has really made his living with those blue-collar type horses, your 514 career victories, many of those have come with those claiming horses, as you mentioned. To finally have this type of horse is really special. But when you're grinding out a living, and it's a living that's been pretty good for you and your wife and your children, when you're grinding out a living like that in this game, Shane, what's the approach? It's different from a guy like Todd Pletcher or Bob Baffert or Steve Asmussen, where you're winning grade ones all the time. It's a different approach, a different mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's different animals. You learn. Yeah. You know, you learn that a lot of the cheaper horses, you know, they can't take the pounding and the drilling and the training. And, you know, the better horses, you know, like him, he goes to track every day. He loves it. I mean, he'll gallop every day and be bucking coming home. You know, he can't wait to go back to the track. And, you know, with the cheaper horses, you know, a lot of them can't take it. A lot of them have a lot of problems. You know, whenever you're getting those $4,000 and $5,000 horses, they have problems or they wouldn't be there. And so it's a lot of time, you know, working on their issues and trying to get them back and to the races. And, you know, it is, but you know what, at the end of the day, whenever the $5,000 horse that you put, you know, all this time into and you know, you've done the things you've done, changed his diet, changed his training, you see his eyes light up and see him change, and he goes out there and wins, it's still just a reward. I mean, winning is winning, you know. You know, what Mesita Rojo is doing is, you know, a dream come true. But, you know, we've spent a lot of months and a lot of days where you're just hoping to win a race. You know, it doesn't matter what price or what level it is, you know, because you gotta win to stay in business. And, you know, the cheap ones are just as rewarding as what he's doing at the end of the day, you know, because they're doing what they can do, too, as much as they can do it. They're just not as talented, you know.
Who are some of the other horses that, when you think back on these 500-plus wins, some of the other horses that were maybe, you know, like that, where they aren't the, you know, the household names, the grade one winners, but they're horses that you did some pretty good work with that you're always going to remember?
You know, we had one horse that I always say, my sons, they laugh at me when I tell them, but I had a horse one time named Tricky E.T. for a man from Dallas, Mr. Bill Space, and he had broke his maiden with another trainer, and it had 7 or 8 bad races, and they moved the horse to me, and I'd watch his replays, and when he broke his maiden, he's in an outside hole, and I noticed every time he had an inside hole, he ran poorly, and he was by a little E.T., and I stretched him out to go around the ground thinking that he didn't like the sand in his face from being in the inside post. And we ran him a mile at Lone Star for $10,000. He won. I run him back for $30,000 on the turf, and he won. And we caught an off-the-turf race one time on a sloppy track, and he just kind of got around everything. We brought him back to Louisiana Downs, and he won an allowance race on the turf, and then he won the Bossier City Handicap, a 3-year-old stakes race that was a really good field. He beat a couple horses in there, Candy Glenn and Sunspot, that went on to make, you know, $500,000. One made $700,000, and you know, we turned him around, and he ended up getting injured in a morning accident. He dumped a rider and got loose and ended up hurting a tendon, and you know, it's pretty much the end of him. But he was one of the most talented horses that I had in all the years. I mean, he won the Bossier City Handicap and never took a drink of water, and you know, he was bucking in the stall afterwards. So Tricky E.T., he was a good one. We bought another mare named Blue Guru. We bought her for $10,000 off the farm. She was an 8-time starter and was still a maiden. And I actually bought her for Mr. Marv Cunningham, because she was an El Prado mare, and El Prado was one of the hottest stallions back then. So we were going to take a shot with a 3-year-old filly that hadn't broke her maiden, and she couldn't run. She was out with Tom Rolfe mare, who was stakes placed and produced a stakes winner. And, you know, we got her going. She broke her maiden first time out, and then she won a $50,000 at the fairgrounds. And then we ended up, we won the Delicata at Louisiana Downs and the Matron at Evangeline Downs, second in $100,000 at Delta. We went to New Mexico, and she was third. And she retired with about $240,000 worth of earnings for us. And, you know, she was a $10,000 purchase. And, you know, we had another one, Cross-Eyed Devil. We claimed him, and he ended up being a champion 3-year-old Louisiana bred at Louisiana Downs. He won a couple of stakes and was second. And so we've had some good claims through the years. And we claimed a horse named Wentz for $5,000, and he was a click off of the track record at Delta, going 6.5, and then he went 6.5 and 16 at Evangeline. He had a throat, or he would have been a really nice horse, but we claimed him for $5,000 and won 4 or 5 allowance races with him. And there've been some good ones through the years, you know. You always stop and think, I wish I could have had all of them at one time, the same time, you know, but it didn't work out that way. But there's been some good ones through the years that we've enjoyed. And, you know, and you learn as you get older. I never thought that you could give me a horse I couldn't win with whenever I was young. And, you know, I finally started figuring out that some of them don't want to do it as bad as the others do. And, you know, had a lot of times you hang on to horses too long that, you know, you should have put them back where if they could be claimed, they'd be claimed. And you get sentimental, get attached to them, you know, when you're there every day, and, you know, you're giving them treats and carrots and, you know, messing with them every day. And, you know, as you get older, you start, you know, thinking about the business side of this. You know, I did a lot of operations on horses and trying to bring them back whenever it really wasn't economical for the owner. And, you know, as you get older, you learn a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think we do a lot better job now of, you know, taking care of the issues and trying to run it like a business for the clients, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be a question that I wanted to ask you, is, you know, how much different is Shane Wilson as a trainer now as opposed to back in 1998? And I think you just answered that. But how about the biggest lessons that you've had to learn, Shane, as you were kind of growing and developing and then stepping away from the game for 2 years and coming back? What are some of those lessons that you had to learn that are helping you now?
Well, you know what I think, you know, number one lesson is for anybody that's going to be out there, you have to be honest with the owners, you know, and, you know, sometimes you're going to get a bad horse or a bad claim or, you know, one that just can't run, you know, and as much as they may not want to hear that, you know, sometimes you get fired, you know, when you tell somebody that they bred this horse and they raised it and then it just can't run, you know, and but that's the best thing you can do is tell them that as soon as you can so they can, you know, they can cut the cost and go on to the next one. And I've just found through the years that the more the owner knows, the easier it is for me to do my job. You know, if we claim him and he's got a bad ankle, then I'll tell you he's got a bad ankle. We need to do whatever we got to do, or we got to give him some time, or, you know, this may not be one we want to hang on to for a long time. And, you know, it just when I first started out, I was always so worried about giving bad news, and then, you know, you don't want to get fired. You know, you're trying to support a family doing this. It's not a pastime or a second job. This is the main way you're making a living for your family. And, you know, I would try to get around the bad news. And you know, now I'm 48 now, and you know, as soon as something happens, you know, the horses get injured in workouts, races. You know, they're no different than when you're watching ESPN tonight and you see all the athletes that aren't going to play this week due to injuries. You know, it's the same thing with these horses. The trainers and the riders and everybody can do everything that they know to do in their power to keep them safe, and they still get hurt, you know. And you know, as soon as it happens, I find the best thing, pick up the phone and call them right then, let them know right now, you know, this is what happened. We're going to x-ray and see what. And, you know, I think for the most part, the people I've been with them for a long time. And, you know, they stick with me because they know that, you know, that we're going to be honest with them. And we're going to try to give the horse every opportunity he can to be the best that he can be. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, it's important to have that relationship. I've heard that from several trainers on this show over the years, that you have to have owners that kind of understand how the game works in some respects too.
Yeah, because you know, this is all about the owners. You know, I tell everybody that all the time, you know, whenever we're making decisions about things, I say, you know, it's all about the owners, because there's not anybody that has to have a racehorse. You know, they do this because they enjoy this, or they love this, or, you know, it's their passion. But I mean, there's nobody out there that has to have what we do. And if you don't train, you know, if you don't take the owner and put him first, you know, and make your decisions based on what's best for him, you know, that if there's no more owners, there's no more job for any of us. And I think that's a lot of that gets overlooked, you know, in the business. You know, everything should be about the owners. Now, that's why I was so impressed when we went to Churchill. You know, they come in there and they were toasting Mr. Davis after the race. And, you know, they told me he could bring his horse anywhere in the country, and that they wanted to thank him for bringing his horse to Churchill Downs. And, you know, they made it it was really, really special for the owner, you know. And he's commented on that to me 10 times since we got back from up there, you know, just, you know, how well they treated him. And you know, I think that's something that, you know, everybody's got to stop and think, because if we don't have the owners, we don't have the horses. And, you know, there's nobody that has to have what we do for a living, you know.
Yeah, so true. Talking with trainer Shane Wilson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Shane, you mentioned your son playing or going to school at LSU. Of course, they have a pretty good football team again this year. You mentioned you went to college to play football. Do you get a chance to make it over there and take in a game?
No, I haven't. I make sure we watch him every weekend, but no, I haven't. Haven't made it over there yet. He's a freshman this year. He goes to the Honors College there, and he's going to be a mechanical engineer. And he tells me he's going to be the best owner that I've ever had whenever he gets out of school and starts making big money. But I guess we'll see about that later. but no, he played football through high school and just didn't didn't really have any interest in college. You know, he wanted to go to school and just start getting an education. And I'm very proud of him. He's a 4.0 student in high school, and so far he's doing the same thing in college.
And he does have an interest in horse racing?
Yeah, I have a 16-year-old that is crazy about it. He wants to be an equine veterinarian. I have a brother-in-law that does that, and he wants to get into vet school and be a vet. But he's the one that can name any horse, and he can tell you everybody won the stakes at Keeneland this weekend in Santa Anita. I mean, he's on it 24/7. But my oldest son, he likes the horse racing and everything, but he never was involved in it. He'll come out and go to the races, but as far as you know, he doesn't. He won't ever want to work in it or do anything like what I do. You know, he said he could see himself being a horse owner, but he don't want the 7 days a week deal like we do.
Yeah, neither one of them are interested in the training side of it, huh?
No, and I'm thankful for that. You know, both of them are smart. One of them made a B in the third grade. I think one made a B in the fourth grade. You know, so they both have really good grades, and you know, I want them to see. Do whatever they enjoy doing. You know, I love what I do, you know, but it makes it hard on a family life. You know, I'm really lucky. My wife, she was assistant trainer for her father whenever we met, and her father, Jim O'Brien, he trained horses all over. He went to California and New York and everywhere. And so, you know, I'm blessed that my wife knows the business and understands all the hours that you're gone and all the birthdays you miss and the football games. And, you know, but I'm happy with both of them to, you know, get them another career where they can, you know, have weekends and holidays and families. And, you know, it's a great business. It's a great life, you know, but you miss a lot of your personal life with the horses, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a, you know, we say it all the time. It's a 365-day-a-year profession. You have to be at the barn. Do you find yourself now, since you've done it for so long, getting – to the point where you can get away for a few days if you and the family want to try and step away for a little vacation?
Yeah, I do. We're going to go this Sunday. The track's closed on Sundays here, so we're going to take off Saturday night. We're going to go down to Grand Isle, and me and the boys and Mr. Davis, actually my owner, we're going to take off and go doing some red fishing and speckled trout fishing this weekend. So the track's closed on Sunday, so I'll work Saturday afternoon, and we'll take off, and then I'll just miss Sunday morning and come back Sunday afternoon. And we'll take a little half days like that and be away. But you know what? I don't think it's so much that, you know, anymore, you know, maybe at one point, but anymore at my age and where we're at with this, it's not really so much that, you know, you can't be away. It's that, you know, you don't want to be away. You know, my wife, she laughs at me on Sundays if I come home and by mid-afternoon, she's like, why don't you just get up and go find something to do? Because she knows I'm going to be bored to death. I'm so used to being at the track and at the barn and at the races. And, you know, it's not a problem to be here every day. You know, I enjoy it, and I look forward to it, you know. And whenever you are gone, you kind of feel guilty that, you know, you wasn't there when you should have been.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you mentioned in the first half of the program here tonight, Shane, when you talked about
sure. –
you know, being with John Franks and his horses. Tell me about about that period. How neat was that to be part of his legacy?
Man, you know what? Mr. Franks, he was a super, super owner. He was my first really big owner. And I tell you what, Farrell Ryder, my wife's father had trained for Farrell Ryder. And when I went in business for myself, I only had four horses and they had a two-year-old sale at Louisiana Downs, and Farrell Ryder had some horses in there he was selling, and he called me over, and he had four colts, all Louisiana-bred two-year-olds, and he told me that he was going to run these horses through the sale, and if he didn't get what he wanted for them, then he wanted me to take them to the fairgrounds. So me, as a 28-year-old guy that has four horses back there that combined might be worth $10,000, I was so excited because these are two-year-olds. You know, they could be anything. And, I was so hoping that they wouldn't bring what he wanted for him in the sale, and they didn't. And so I'm at the barn over there at the sales pavilion at Louisiana Downs, and I'm taking the horses out and letting them eat grass and everything. And, you know, my wife comes over after she got off work, and she's seen the horses, and I'm telling her the whole deal. I'm so excited. And here comes John Franks walking up with his stable manager, Diane Alexander. he walks up and says hi to Mr. Ryder, and Mr. Ryder introduces me, and Mr. Franks pulls out a checkbook, and he tells him, I want those four colts that you bought back. He said, you just name me the price, and I'm going to write you a check. And you can imagine me, I'm over here about to throw up, you know, because Mr. Franks could buy anything he wants to buy. And Farrell Ryder looks at him, and he looks at me, and he says, well, John, he said, I'd like for you to have the horses. He said, but I already made a deal with this guy, Shane Wilson. He said, I'm going to let him take them to the fairgrounds and train them for me. And Mr. Frank said, just name a number. I'm going to write you a check right now. I'm going to buy them. Tell me what you want. And he said, well, they're not for sale because I already made a deal with Shane. And so Mr. Frank tells him, well, let me buy 50% of each of them, and Shane can take them from me and you. And that's how I got in business with Mr. Franks. And
wow.
We took those four to the fairgrounds. And thank goodness, you know, Farrell Ryder was a man of his word, because most people would have took that check and that'd have been the end of that, you know. But I took those four from Mr. Franks and him down there, and one of them named Spindleweb, he ends up breaking his maiden allowance, made over $100,000. We had another named Too Light to Quit Too that won a maiden allowance and ended up running second in the Acadia Stakes at Louisiana Downs. And, you know, I was so intimidated by him because I grew up in Shreveport and Bossier, and I was at the races all the time whenever he was there. And, you know, I knew that he could have horses with anybody in the country. Had a lot of them with Hollendorfer and William White and a bunch of people. And, you know, I was so intimidated by him, you know, as a kid and working for him, that I almost cost myself his business. He sent me some other horses of his own, and I got up to about a dozen horses for him at one time, and then I was back down to like two. And, you know, man, you didn't get the best horses that he had because you're a kid starting out. And, you know, man, I wasn't doing any good for him. And it got to the point to where I would see his name on the phone, and I just didn't even want to answer because I knew I was going to get fired sooner or later. And me and my wife talked one night after one of the horses ran poorly. And I told him, I said, man, I don't even want to call him. And she said, Shane, you know what? He pays you, and he deserves a phone call. You know, you need to call him before he calls you. And, you know, we ended up getting through it, and I started realizing that, you know, he just wanted you to have a plan. You could run last, but just call him and say, hey, I scoped him, the horse was sick, or we need to run further, we need to try blinkers, we need to geld him. And as long as you had some kind of plan, you know, he was good. And shoot, I got up to 28 horses for him whenever he passed away. And I mean, man, he was the type of guy that would send you a horse that might have had 10 starts with five other trainers and hadn't beat a horse yet. You know, and I called him and I asked him, I said, well, what are we doing? What do you want to do with this horse? And he says, Shane, this horse's mother produced two greatest stakes winners, and the second dam produced this. He said, somebody is going to learn what it is that she's looking for and going to be able to flip the switch. And this horse still has a chance to be a good horse. And I mean, man, he would give him chance after chance. And, you know, he was the if you were a horse, you would want him to be your owner, because man, he just would refuse to give up on one. And, you know, and he was great with bad news. And I mean, he was a really, really kind man. I mean, whenever my first son was born, he called me, and I was at the hospital with my wife, and I looked down at my phone and it was him. And I'm thinking, man, surely he's not at the barn, you know? And I answered the phone and he asked me where I was, and I told him, and He said, Shane, I know where you are. He said, of course I know. Everybody at the track knows you're having a baby today. And he said, I want to tell you something. And I cut him off. I said, Mr. Frank, soon as they say Becky's okay and the baby's okay, I'm gone. I'm heading back to the track. I said, I'll be there, you know, this afternoon as soon as I can get there. And he gets real quiet, and he says, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I'm going to check with each stable gate security guard they have at Louisiana Downs. And if I can find any one of them that tells me they saw you at the barn today, he said, I'm going to fire you and take all my horses from you. He said, today is the day about that baby and your wife. And he said, Shane, the horses will be there when you get back. He said, so look, you spend today. You can never have this day back again. He said, spend today with that baby. He said, whenever your wife gets out, he said, you give her a kiss and tell her John Franks loves her. And he said, when you get back to her room, he said, there's going to be some flowers for her. He said, you call me tomorrow. And we got back to the room, and she had a dozen yellow roses, red roses, white roses. There was a bucket of cookies in there that had a congratulations, it's a boy, and a card. And, you know, I mean, it was just that the type of person that he was. You know, he was so, so kind, you know, and, you know, you wish you would have had more time with him. He passed away just a few years into us working together. And maybe 5 years or so I was with him. But, you know, he was a super owner and just a really kind person. You know, he'd call me and tell me they had a check ready at the office. And I'd say, okay, I'll send Becky up there to get my check. And he'd say, no, you tell Becky that if she brings the boys up to my office and let me see the boys, then I'll have a check for her. He said, if there ain't no boys coming to the office, then call back next day. You know, he's just, and at the same time, you know, he wanted to win. I mean, he was a Clips Award winning, you know, owner. And, I mean, man, he bred a lot of nice horses. That was the exciting thing with him. If he called you and told you that he had a 2-year-old coming from Florida, I mean, you never knew what it could be. You know, it could be a half to answer lively or what, you know. It was a great experience. And like I said, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about how to deal with clients from Mr. Franks. You know, I was very intimidated by him being who he was at first. And then once I realized that he was just, you know, just a man and just wanted your honesty. And you know, he was great.
Yeah, John Franks, of course, known for being an outstanding owner. He did win the Eclipse Award on 4 different occasions as the sport's outstanding owner. He passed away December 31st of 2003 at the age of 78, and a member of the Fairgrounds Hall of Fame, and as Shane just alluded to, somebody who not only campaigned a good horse, but bred a good horse too. And I love that story, Shane. That couldn't have been a more fitting way to wrap up this program. We have about 2 minutes left, believe it or not, and I wish we had more time because I could probably spend another hour visiting with you here tonight. It's been a lot of fun. In about a minute and a half, what does the future hold for Shane Wilson? Where do you see things going from here?
Oh, hopefully, you know, like I said, my youngest son's got a couple more years of school, and that's really why I've stayed in Louisiana, moved to South Louisiana, because I could be home. I can be within an hour and a half of Delta or 45 minutes of Evangeline. And, you know, once Connor goes off to college and it's just me and Becky, I'd really like to go up north and try to see if we could maintain a stable at, you know, Churchill or Keeneland or maybe Delaware or, you know, somewhere like that. You know, we've been doing this all these years down here, and you think that you can compete with those if you have the animals to do it. And, you know, with Macedo Rojo, we've shown that we can, you know, campaign a horse and travel him and have him show up whenever it's there. And, you know, so hopefully in the future we'll have a stable and be able to go to, you know, Churchill and Keeneland and places like that, maybe New York, try some different places and, you know, see how we can compete.
Well, Shane, it's been a lot of fun, and all the best with that goal and all the best with Mocito Rojo and all the rest of the horses. Keep up the great work and keep doing things the right way, my friend. Like all of our guests who come on the program, we're going to send you a gift from one of our sponsors. That's Flair Equine Nasal Strips, and all the best moving forward.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Shane Wilson here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Don't forget, head over to our website, check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk.